Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right, man. We've got a jam-packed show for you this morning, and I want to get right at it. Let's get busy. My guest is none other than Mr. Alan Borsig. Mr. Borsig, you still are at Marquette Law, is that correct?
That is correct.
And what is your title?
Senior Fellow in Law and Public Policy, I don't know about law and public policy, but the senior fellow just means I'm an old guy, which that's true.
But you know what? There's some saving grace about being an old guy, right?
Well, I'm not complaining.
we know what the alternative is, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of miles on the odometer. You know?
Hey, well, you know what? That represents wisdom, and it's one of the reasons why I love having you on. You know, Alan, I want to get right at it. All over the nation, there's a crisis with the lack of educators and people going into education. You and I remember a time when the teaching profession was well respected. And, you know, when people went into education, mainly women, and they stayed there for an entire career. And so the communities respected them, the churches respected them, the families respected them. Why is that no longer the case?
Oh, well, if you think I have that much wisdom, you're wrong. I don't know. There's so many reasons. In Wisconsin, I think lots of people point to Act 10 and 2011 with Governor Scott Walker and trying to break the teachers union. And I wouldn't dismiss that factor, but it's way more than that because it is nationwide. the politics are so intense. The divisions among us are so intense. Everybody thinks they're, you know, I once heard it said that nobody's watched a job in action more than teachers because everyone was in school from, you know, kindergarten through 12th grade. So everyone thinks they know how to be a teacher, and it's just not true. It is a profession and a skill, but it doesn't get much respect, and we're paying a price for it nationwide now. And in terms of exactly that, the ranks of teachers.
You know, Alan, if you, I don't care whether it's a private school, whether it's a public school, wherever it is, there's whether it's an urban school, whether it's a rural school, teachers are hard to be found. And if you look at the schools that educate teachers, UWM and others, and that specialize in that, there just aren't enough people who are flowing into, you know, that career path as there was before. Many people say, well, it doesn't pay enough to have to deal with all of the things that go along with it. You know, back in your and my time, the teachers would, especially in the early grades, the children would come to school and they would know their alphabets and they would know how to count. And so social issues, social service issues weren't on the forefront. But all of those things have changed now, Alan, and a teacher has to be more than just an educator.
Schools are being asked to be so many things, to feed the kids, to care for the kids, to provide. And there's good reason for it, because that's where kids are. I mean, it's not fair on a certain level. You can understand what happens. The social and emotional needs of kids, mental health needs, were rising rapidly through the 2010s. And then you hit the pandemic, and it's all the more so. So schools are trying to spend more and provide more in terms of mental health, services and so on, but it's pretty overwhelming, and it makes the teacher everything to kids, which in one way is one of the rewards of the profession, is you're really there to make a difference for kids, and you can. But it also increases the stresses to levels that are not really manageable for an awful lot of people, especially if you're not getting adequate enough support from parents, from administrators above you, from who knows who. If you feel like you're out there facing an enormous load every day and not getting help in meeting it, it gets to be pretty big turnoff pretty quickly for a lot of teachers.
You know, Alan, they're on the front line, and there are not enough people who recognize that. I was at a school on yesterday, and a school that I've been affiliated with and volunteering, and I was there for the first time since school, a public school, a Milwaukee public school, and I was there for the first time since after I got off here at the radio station. I was there for the first time since the semester started, and what I witnessed was, man, there's so many children in the building, and the activity, it just appears to me, is different than the time that you and I were in school. Clearly, you know, when you and I were in school, they had candlelights for lights, for lighting in the buildings, and but just to see what the schools are faced with, and the energy level of students today is a lot higher, and it's because every one of them has, as they're walking through the hallway, they've got an electronic device called a cell phone in their hands. And in between classes, they've got those things, and they've got them on. And when they come into a classroom, how can a teacher, Alan, deal with somebody who has the world in their hands?
Not only do they have the world in their hands, but they've got all their friends.
Right.
They've got access to games. They've got, I've been covering that aspect of things. What are schools going to do about smartphones since they arose in the early 2000s? And I'm not aware of hardly any cases, only in maybe some really buttoned-down schools, where they're effective at doing it, where they're effective at getting kids to leave their phones in their lockers, or check them in at the office, or even, you know, I know a suburban high school a few years ago, they went to a rule that you could have your phone out between classes in exchange for a compliance with not having them out during classes. So what happened? The kids used their phones heavily between classes and during classes. It didn't make any difference at all, hardly.
You just get to a point, Alan, where there's no way a teacher can compete with that. And this I'll blame on parents, because, you know, parents say to me, I want to know where my kid is. I need to know where my child is at all times, and nobody's going to tell me that my child can't have a phone, and it makes me comfortable. And my response to parents is, okay, if that's the case, and I can understand today, you know, Alan, parents wanting to know and feeling safe that their child is safe. But that doesn't mean that they have to have an iPhone. Get them a flip phone, right? If all your concern is where your child is, why wouldn't that be the case?
You are correct that I think some of the biggest opposition taking phones away in school, including in class, comes from parents and not just from the kids. For that reason, I mean, how many school shootings does it take to create a nationwide atmosphere of worry? And the answer is not very many, because everyone worries. So,
you
want them to help me.
You know, Alan, I always say that when you go into an urban school, you've got to walk through a metal detector, the high schools, the metal detector. And so, yes, so to make sure that everybody's safe, they walk through metal detectors. But you defeat that whole safety issue with the metal detector, Alan, when there's a cell phone. Because when something breaks out, students call whomever it is, their friends, their relatives, their families, and through them calling, the doors of all the schools, you can't have a security person at every door. So the cell phone defeats the security measures in the schools.
There are certainly cases where that's happened. I could name one Milwaukee high school with a history of, you know, as soon as something happens, kaboom, the phones light up, and kids from outside or adults are rushing to the school to make trouble worse.
You know, Alan, go ahead, sir.
No, it does happen, that's all.
Well, and so you when people talk about the fact that educators aren't teaching the children, and the first thing they do is point the finger at the educator and say, well, you know, teachers were different back then. Well, yeah, teachers were different back then, but so were students and so were parents. Is it safe to say that, Alan?
I totally agree with that.
Go ahead.
And more broadly, the stability in kids' lives and in communities is a big factor, and there's so many kids, not only in the lowest income neighborhoods, but even sometimes in rich neighborhoods, who are leading very unstable lives, very chaotic. The stresses within the home, the mental states, the addictions, these throw off kids' lives in such a big way. And one of the places where it shows up is in school.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. On the Friend, Mr. Alan Borsett. You can join us at 844-967-2789 if you choose. We'll be right back. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsick. He's a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law. And he writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about education. You know, Alan, I don't care where it is, and whether it's in the suburbs or in the city, or whether it's all over the nation, something has happened in our nation with education, and we just don't seem to take it as seriously as other nations. And so, you know, you get a little frustrated. At least I know I do, because, you know, there is no future for our nation if our young people aren't educated. It's a global reality.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think the impact that's as it's being determined, emerging from the pandemic and these last now three disrupted school years. We're going into the fourth school year since this started, has been much worse on low income and minority kids, those who were, you know, at, shall we say, disadvantages to start with. It's just gotten, you know, rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and I'm not talking only about money. So there was just a big report released on Monday this week by a national outfit that really clearly demonstrated, they called it a K-shaped recovery from the pandemic, that on one leg it's going up and on one leg it's going down. So the impact is all over the nation, all over, affecting everybody, but it's much worse for those who started with the fewest cards in their hand to play the education game. You know, it's bad.
You know, Alan, when you, let's look at our own state. We've got a governor who right now is making investments in education, and there's pushback saying, well, there's already enough money in education. The reason that kids aren't succeeding is not because there's not enough money in education. What say you?
Well, I think the most important day of the school year, this current school year by far, is going to be November 8th, which is the election day. And I'm not here to take sides on that, but I can tell you that if Tony Evers wins, liberal Democratic incumbent, there's a much different path ahead than if Tim Michaels wins, the Republican challenger. And it isn't a path, frankly, in which Evers' plans, he announced a big plan the first day of school in Milwaukee last week to add $2 billion more to education spending in the next 2 years, increase the revenue cap, as it's called, increase aid to special ed kids, all of that. That isn't going to happen, at least not the way the governor envisions it, because the Republicans, without a doubt, are going to control the legislature. So you'll have this kind of deadlock with incremental change if Tony Evers wins. And if Michaels wins, Evers' main role in education the last almost 4 years now has been to veto Republican plans. Now those plans will go forward, whether it's much expanded school choice, what's called the Parental Bill of Rights, which would give parents a lot more role in saying what's going on in classrooms, generally from a very conservative standpoint, or advocacy for that is from a very conservative standpoint. And in the case of Milwaukee Public Schools, who knows what's going to happen? You know, the Republicans in the legislature passed bills last spring to blow up MPS, to break it into 4 to 8 districts, and create a commission to figure out how to do that. Well, Evers, of course, vetoed that. What'll happen if Michaels is sitting there? Will MPS be totally restructured, and to what effect? Or will they come up with other plans? You know, big things will happen, all from a Republican standpoint, if Michaels wins, because there will be no impediment to stopping that, and Evers, if he's elected, will be a big impediment. So that we're at a crucial, we're approaching this crucial point where the people of Wisconsin will speak on what path to take here. But it's going to have a big impact. The Republicans held down school spending for a decade now, but especially 2 years ago, the last state budget, because they said, well, there's this ton of federal money coming in pandemic relief, which was sort of true and mostly not true, because so much of it was aimed at a small number of districts, especially in Milwaukee Public Schools. And it runs out in 2024 for the most part. You have to spend that money by 2 years from now, which means school districts all over the state are feeling increasingly crimped financially, and now they're going to go back to the legislature and say, okay, last time you talked about the pandemic aid, what are you going to do this time? That's going to be really interesting to see. The financial pressure on schools is very high statewide, and I don't know what's going to happen next.
So, Alan, do you have time for one more segment, or do you have to run?
I can hang around a little longer.
Okay, okay. We've got to go to a break. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsuk. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law. We're talking about education. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsuk. He's a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law. You know, Alan, you just heard a little news blip about schools being worried about some threat that was made in law enforcement. All of these things, Alan, interfere with education, and so we live in a climate right now where there are all these periphery things that interfere with the education of our students, and I don't know how you fix that, Alan.
I don't either. I heard a principal. I think it was during the school year last year, rattle off all the things he had to deal with in a day. And then at the end he said, and none of these actually involve educating kids. It was all staffing problems and this crisis and that crisis and safety issues and the angry parents and so on. He said, at what point is it really about teaching kids? And I worry about that in the whole national and Wisconsin dialogue about education at the moment, that there's so much emphasis on these hot button issues, books in the library and control of school boards and race related materials and so on. I don't want to minimize the importance of those issues. And especially if you look at the whole range of views on them, but I'm kind of old schoolish and I say, how come we're not talking so much about reading and writing and,
yes,
and teaching kids about the world and math and so on? You know, the first round of national, there are going to be several rounds of this fall, both in Wisconsin and nationwide. Test scores from last year, the first round came out 2 weeks ago, national only. There was no breakdown by state. And the gains in reading and math for nine-year-olds, who were the focus of this set of tests, had been reversed in a dramatic way. And basically everything that had been gained in the last 20 years had been undone, especially in math. And you say, we need to talk about educating kids and not some of these issues that, as important as they seem or are actually secondary to what schools are supposed to do.
You know, Alan, all I know is this, and like you, my hair is no longer gray; it's now white because I've gone beyond the gray part of it. you know what I mean, and so
I don't have left at all.
So my parents, my mother, did not raise saying about what we were being taught in school. She trusted, and neither did other parents of that generation. They were trusting of what was being taught in school. There was none of this, we're going to take over what books are in the library, Let's get rid of those books. We're going to run for school board, and we're going to change everything, and we're going to demand what's being taught, and we're going to tell teachers what they should teach. As a parent, you don't know. I'm a parent. Or, you know, my kids are all grown, but I was a parent. Was I going into the schools and demanding that teachers don't teach this? I'm not an educator, Alan. What do I know about teaching children? And parents, to me, parents have to realize they don't know what it takes to educate these children. And what you just stated is part of what's at the root of the problem. All these other ancillary things that are really causing and wreaking havoc. And I think in many instances, parents aren't even aware of the depth of the havoc that is wreaking.
Everybody thinks they're an expert. Everybody wants their way. Among other things going on these days, in my opinion, is we're a nation of sore losers.
Yes.
You know, they want to back down on anything, whether it's the presidential election or school boards or whatever. And so you just get more and more hostility, more anger, more whatever. Show me a school that is working well, and I will show you a school that has a good and constructive and even sweet culture around it, that it's not a place where people are angry and shouting at each other and demanding this and demanding that. From any point of view, it's a place where people are actually like, hey, let's row this boat together, and that's just increasingly rare.
You know, Alan, there was a time not so long ago that parents committees worked in conjunction with schools. And so what do you need us to volunteer to do? You know what I mean, Alan? So where can we help you? Not somebody with a hammer and we're not going to, this is not about us looking to help you parents helping to make the school better. It is we, the parents, who are going to control it. And I don't care whether that's in the suburbs or where that is, Alan. That is another part of this. And it's another one of the reasons, as I talk with educators who just have had enough. And they're saying, listen, we don't make enough money. I can actually go into a different career path. I've got my degree. And transferred into that without all of this unnecessary stress, and make a better living. People seem to think that that educators work, you know, 6-7 hours a day, Alan. They believe that mistakenly. They don't know right how much time these people are actually putting into their professions.
And then we've got summers off and so on.
Yes.
Are there teachers who take advantage of these things? Yeah, I bet there are. But is that a generalization that's valid? Definitely not. Teachers, I have no question that as a generalization, teachers are hardworking. They work, in many cases, year-round. And they put in long, hard days. They're not going home from school and sitting and watching video games and network TV things. They are really in it genuinely for the kids. And I mean, that gets back to where we started with the supply of teachers. I think about the and I've had on my mind lately the old Beatles song Help. But the important thing is this help. I need somebody, which a lot of school districts are in that position. But the next line is help, not just anybody. And you say there's so many schools, especially the higher needs areas and such, where they're in that help. I need somebody, and you know, if you have a fairly minimal qualifications, you can get a job. But in reality, it's not just anybody. It needs to be special people who are really trained, who are dedicated, who are excellent teachers. We all had teachers in our day who were really good, and we knew who they were. We all had teachers who were not so good, and we knew who they were, too. If anything is going to move us forward here, it's going to be having more of those, not just anybody teachers, special teachers. And if anything is a threat at the moment, is that we are not doing enough to create and support those teachers.
You know, Alan, that is so well said, because from the time I was in kindergarten, all the way through middle school, high school, grade school, middle school, high school, my teachers remained the same, right? I mean, there wasn't turnover every year. Different teachers. The teachers, I knew the teachers knew me.
Right.
I'm from a family of 13. And so I would follow my older siblings into the schools, and the same teachers remained who taught my older siblings, and they remained even after to teach my younger siblings. That's stability, right? They knew my family. They knew my mom, my dad. They knew what to expect because, you know, you're an Ingram child. The educators knew, and your parents weren't going to tolerate foolishness. So when I walked into the classroom, the educator knew right away, hey, you're an Ingram. I know your family, and you're not going to do this. And you know what? That mattered. But now from semester to semester, Alan, that person in front of the child changes.
Frequently true. The turnover's pretty. The notion that teachers were going to, in huge mass, quit at the end of last year or during the pandemic in general, generally hasn't been as true as some would say. I mean, is there a lot of turnover? Is there instability? Are these issues? Yes. It hasn't been as bad. What's a bigger problem is new people coming in, new ways of that are successful in bringing people into the profession, and the ranks get thinner. And also that there's a lot more movement, as you said. One of the unintended consequences, at least I think it was unintended, of Act 10 going back a decade was that it's much easier for teachers to move from district to district. And districts, and within public schools, we're not even talking about private school factors, districts that have more money, and under the state formula this happens, can recruit teachers from districts that have less money. So the instability, yeah. I remember talking to a teacher at the end of last school year whose school was losing a bunch of people, and she said she was telling her kids that she said, I'm going to be here next year. At least I'm going to be here. And the kids really wanted to know that because they wanted that stability.
You know, Alan, it is it's just refreshing to have this conversation with you, because, you know, at the root, it appears, of all of this is this fight, this continued debate on whether or not public schools or private schools are the right answer. And if we just had more private schools, if they would leave the public schools alone, it's a mixture of all of those things. But these can't be adversarial if we are really concerned about what's in the best interest of the children. Is that correct?
Well, is it happening? Not too much. Is it correct? Yes. Like I said, show me a school that's functioning well, and I'll show you a place where difficult problems exist. And they're worked on in cooperative ways, and nobody gets their way all the time. But the whole notion of we got to do this, we got to do what's right for the kids, is the dominant feeling, and that's just too rare these days. You know, a lot of the concerns parents have, even about books and libraries and such, there's some validity to them. I mean, there's stuff in libraries that really wasn't there in those days when you and I were in school. And so even though those parents need to be listened to also, but and parents need to be active partners and advocates for their kids' education. All of these things are good up to the point where it becomes a war, and then it's not so good. So we need to, you know, try to have peace in that war in schools, and the kids will benefit when that happens.
You know, Alan, I want to thank you, as always, my friend, for taking the time out to spend with us and bring us, you know, that wisdom. Nobody ever said you had all the answers, but certainly you are at least in the ball game. You're having dialogue and conversation with the people who are educating our children.
Yeah.
At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I want to thank Ms. Alan Borsig and welcome my next guest, Pastor Greg Lewis from Pastors United and
Souls
to the Polls.
Yeah.
Hey, man. So how are things going, man?
Man, it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work just trying to get people to understand there's a vote November 8th. And, you know, even further than that, that you can vote early and you need to send in those absentee ballots. So it's, you know, most of the folks with absentee ballots are voters, but they hold their those ballots
too long.
Yeah, and then, you know, they don't get counted if they don't get there by 8 o'clock on November 8th. And we don't know what the, you know, post office or postal service would provide for service. So, you know, you got to do it early so you can make sure. So that's what we're doing.
Let me ask you.
Just trying to push all that stuff.
Let me ask you, man. There's this. If people don't fill their ballots out completely, there can't be any help anymore from, you know, the people who are at the sites with helping them, maybe, you know, with an address or something like that. They basically said they can't help anybody at all, and if that information is not filled out totally, the ballot stone is unaccepted.
Yeah, you know, that's part of the suppression.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's part of the suppression, Brother Earl. And see, this whole thing is just getting so putrid. I mean, because if you're not going to vote for them, they don't want you to vote
right
at all. And, you know, black folks, brown folks, they're not really accustomed to engaging into the process. So you might miss an address. You might miss a signature. You might
right
miss some of those things. And they're quite aware of that. The folks who don't want you to vote are quite aware
right
of that. So they do everything they can to make sure that your vote isn't counted. And what we have to do is stand up against all that kind of nonsense. And we have to stop accepting this kind of scorched earth politics, Brother Earl, where they'll destroy everything. They'll burn up everything just to stay in power. Because right now, people vote against their own self-interest.
No question.
You know.
So let me ask you, so what can you do if the court systems are supporting that? In other words, now if a person comes in and they're elderly and they may just forget to put something down, their ballot the person can't who's there can't say, "Hey, hey, Greg, man, you left out the zip code." The ballot's thrown away.
Yeah, it's thrown away, man. But
I mean, man,
Earl, you ever played in a game and the referee just didn't give you no calls?
I was always that guy.
You know, it's a fixed fight, man. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's a fixed fight, Earl. It really is. But what do, man? You don't just lay down and just, you know, you can't lay down in the field.
No.
You still got to stand up and try to catch a fly ball, man. You still got to fight. You still got to swing. You just might hit something. So that's what we're doing, man. It's a fixed fight, man. Everything has been skewed. Everything has been, you know, put into a circle of disinformation, complex situations. Everything is, man. I'm not talking about some things, but every chance that they get, they put you in positions of trouble. So that's what we're fighting against. And you know what? And that makes it so hard for people to get out and go vote, man. But we try to get them to come out anyway.
You know, Greg, a part of it, I guess, is once you've got to educate them, too. Because, again, to know that your ballot, even though you get them out to vote, to know that it's so easy for them to dump your ballot, you've not just now got to be forced with the challenge of saying, hey, Earl, we need you to get out and vote. We need you to make sure that you fill all of this out, right? Otherwise, the purpose of you getting out and voting is eliminated.
And that's why we're having this meeting on the 24th, Brother Earl. I hope you can be there. On the 24th at MATC at 11 o'clock, we're going to have a lunch meeting, a free lunch for faith leaders, so we can talk about going in our communities and giving them the kind of information you're talking about right now. You got to completely fill those things out. You got to, you know, focus on going to vote early, Earl. That's the easiest way to do things. And make sure that you vote on Sundays when we call you out. You know, go out and vote on Sundays. So that's early voting, too. But, yeah, you're absolutely right, man. That vote gets thrown away. And I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to say this. Listen, back in, I think it was 2018, when the last time Mayor Barrett ran for office,
right,
we tried to get the date changed because I had COVID. I was dying. And, you know, it went all the way to the Supreme Court. We getting that date
State
changed.
Supreme Court?
No, U.S.
Okay.
Supreme Court. And my name was on the suit. You know, Lewis against Wisconsin, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And we didn't get the date changed, but you know what we got? We got them to count the absentee ballots that came in late. From that Tuesday, they got to count them up till Monday. And it was 118,000 absentee ballots that were late.
So listen, man, we've got to go to a break. My guest is Pastor Greg Lewis from Pastors United Souls to the Polls and
Power to the Polls.
Power to the Polls. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.